Welcome to Painting the Midnight Oil Podcast with your host, Dan Oils.
I was talking to a listener recently and I was asking her some questions about the podcast. And I asked her, you know, first, how did she come across the podcast? And then I also asked her what she liked the best about it, and specifically the format that she preferred. At the very beginning of this podcast, in season one primarily, I started to structure these episodes as a lesson. And I felt like I was indebted to do that as a teacher. And I never really knew of anyone that had done that before, so I wanted to do something original. And I felt like it was an effective way of relaying information and keeping the audience engaged. And so if you've listened to every episode, you know, at the very beginning, you'll remember that I was asking a lot of questions, a lot of warm-up questions to activate your imagination, keep you engaged, and feel like you are more intimately involved in this conversation. And honestly, it's a lot more work. A lot more planning. And I kind of like the idea of just coming in here and having like a very bare bones, you know, skeleton of an outline and just running with it. I think that's a lot of fun. It's challenging for me to just use a little bit of information and rely on myself to tell a riveting story, an authentic but riveting story. And, you know, as I've mentioned before, I don't have a whole lot of prep time to prepare for these episodes. So sometimes I'll listen to the episode as I'm making some quick edits and I'll be like, oh, I wish I would have said this, or I forgot to include this. And so they're not perfect, and nothing is. Or very rarely will you find perfection. Sometimes you can, depending on the circumstances. And I have to be okay with that. And we're going to get into why I'm okay with that here in a second. But she preferred... turns out that she's a teacher too, and she prefers when I ask those questions because it really sets the scene and provides some framework, which is the purpose of those questions when you're in a classroom setting. It's not only to keep, you know, the learners engaged, but it also gives them an idea of where we are headed in the lesson. And based on that feedback, I think that I'm going to do a better job of including those questions at the very beginning of the podcast. So my question to you is, what is art? You know, what does that mean to you? What does art mean to you? And if you are an artist yourself, and I know for me, it took me a long time to call myself an artist. I always thought that when people refer to themselves as artists, it kind of came off as pompous. But I do call myself an artist now. And I can't pinpoint the exact moment where I made that leap and I crossed that threshold where I referred openly that I was an artist. I think it was mostly reliant on outside sources and the way that my art was accepted by various people or, you know, organizations. I don't think that should be the threshold. You know, regardless, if you consider you're an artist or if you are practicing art, we'll say that. You know, what does your art mean to you? All right? And feel free to answer both questions regardless of your perceived or self-imposed title. But what is art? And if you are creating art, what does your art mean to you? What are you trying to achieve with your art? And at some point, you know, for those of you that are creating art, you really have to understand the answer to that question because it's really going to guide your art. And it's a very complex concept, I think. And if you ask 100 different people, you're probably going to get close to 100 different answers as to what art is, or what art means, or the purpose of art. And I've really loved thinking about that question over the last, I guess it's close to a year and a half now, that I've been creating art. I'm going to look up the official definition of art. And while I'm doing that, I want you to consider asking yourself that question. this might help jumpstart your thought process too as I'm looking this up. All right, so this is from, and I'm just like Googling this. It doesn't give the actual dictionary source, but the first definition is, I guess this is just Google Dictionary. The expression or application of human creative skill and imagination, typically in a visual form such as painting or sculpture, producing works to be appreciated primarily for their beauty or emotional power. Quote, the art of the Renaissance. Now, I have a lot of problems. I have a lot of issues with that definition. So it says the expression or application of human creative skill and imagination. And I don't like that word skill, because I think with art, skill is very subjective. And if someone isn't as skilled, are they not creating art? You know, I would say that they absolutely are creating art. And who am I to say what is skilled? I'm not formally trained. Does that mean that I don't have the requisite skill to create art? All right, if a toddler, you know, my kids aren't toddlers anymore, but if a toddler is producing something through their eyes, through their lens of the world, you know, they may not have quote unquote skill. They may not understand different mediums or techniques. Is that not creating art? Is that not valuable? Is that not worthy? You know, I would argue that of course it is. Of course it's art. It continues, typically in a visual form such as painting or sculpture. Okay, so it gives some specifics, which I don't really have an issue with, but I think that sometimes when you get into specifics, you are apt to leave a lot out. And, you know, when I'm reading this, I think back to my dad. My dad, you know, is not formally trained in art. I don't think he's ever taken an art class. I don't think he's ever really sketched or painted anything in his life. But I would call my dad an artist. You know, my dad has his own construction slash like landscaping business. It's changed over the years. You know, we started out like mowing grass when he was a kid, saved money, and then started to, over time, buy more and more equipment and more machines, and learned how to use those machines to expand his services and his scope of work. And, you know, he works for a lot of the top builders in Washington, D.C. He works for a lot of millionaire clients. And his services are really expansive. And I remember on one particular job, we were working for the agent of Michael Jordan, when Michael Jordan was playing for the Washington Wizards. And I'm not going to give away the address or the neighborhood. But he had all of these really large stones delivered to his house, or the builder did. I don't know if the client had input on this design feature or not. And by stones, I mean these were like massive boulders. And my dad was tasked with creating an embankment, and then using these stones to create a really large retaining wall. And it was up to my dad to figure out how these stones were going to be positioned. Now, my dad will do that type of work consistently, where he has to use his imagination. He has to be creative. And yes, he's using machines, and it's noisy, and it's dirty, and it's the complete opposite environment from the environment where I'm painting. But it's still art. You know, he's still using his imagination, and he's still using his creativity to produce something. I love that story, because that was one of the best compliments that my dad ever gave me without ever realizing that he was complimenting me. You know, my dad and myself, we kind of come from two different worlds in a way. And, you know, I didn't follow his passions in a lot of different ways. But my dad was always okay with that, which I think is really remarkable. And a lot of dads, I think, aren't okay with that. And this was a really big project. And I think I was driving to the jobs then, so I was around 16. And this was a $1 million project, you know, multi-$1 million project. And this was a very important feature of the backyard. And I remember, as accomplished as he was like, "All right, Danny, I want you to tell me where you think these stones should go." He seemed to have like a little bit of a block, and he gave me that privilege. And that like blew my mind. And, you know, did he listen to every single advice? Every single one? No. But just the fact that he gave me that chance was a big deal for me. The reason why it's such a big deal is because you have to be incredibly careful when you are manipulating these large boulders, because when you're using these machines, the machines have teeth on them, depending on the bucket, depending on the attachment that you're using. So these teeth are like sometimes 6, sometimes 8 inches long, maybe 2 or 3 inches wide. And depending on the size or the width of the bucket, you have 3, 4, 5 teeth. And so you're trying to manipulate these boulders, but you're also trying to touch these boulders very infrequently, because the more you touch these boulders, the more you try to move them and manipulate them, the more likely you are to scratch them and permanently scar the boulder. And so if you accidentally scar a side of the boulder, even if you wanted that side to face, you know, the house or face people as they're sitting on that patio, you have to move the boulder around so they don't see the scratch. So there's a lot that goes into these projects that I think a lot of people don't understand. But I say that because, again, even though that's not, you know, your prototypical or quintessential art studio, my dad is still producing art in that dusty and noisy backyard under construction. Now, this definition continues. It says, producing works to be appreciated primarily for their beauty or emotional power. And I have a problem with that too, because there's a lot of different reasons why people are drawn to art. It doesn't necessarily have to be for beauty. I mean, there are very historic works that I don't find particularly beautiful, but they're innovative, or they're raw. And I guess that goes more in line with the emotional power that art can possess. But just because someone isn't appreciative of what you're doing, does that not make it art? Like, if I'm producing art and I'm posting things to my Instagram or my website and no one's buying art or no one's following me, am I not producing art then, if no one is openly appreciating it? Or if you aren't selling your work, or if no one's following you on Instagram, are you not producing art suddenly? Of course not. You are producing art. And I think that, and these are just hypothetical, but I think that if you're using those metrics as justification for art, then you're going down a very dangerous path, a very misleading and potentially degrading path. And I think those numbers can be skewed in a lot of different ways. And maybe I'll get into that later this episode. I'm not sure. But if people are sitting at the agent's home and they're on the patio and they're drinking wine or whatever they're doing, and they're talking, and they're not openly discussing that boulder wall that my dad installed, does that wall cease to be art? You know, does it have to be appreciated by everybody? Is it still art if only my dad appreciates it, or the contractor that, or the general contractor that hired my dad to perform that task? So I think that art is very complex. That's the point I'm trying to make. You don't even have to agree with my sentiments, but the point I'm trying to make is that art is a very challenging concept to understand. I was on Instagram the other day, and I was going through a post that one of my friends made. And he's actually the brother of Spencer, who produced my voiceover. And real quick, hiring Spencer to do my voiceover was very important. And at some point, I want Spencer to create music for my intro. And he's out traveling the world right now, and he's producing, releasing his album that he spent a lot of time creating and producing. But I really want to hire him. I really want him to create music for my intro. Because the more and more I hear about AI and artificial intelligence, the more I personally want to cling to pure human expression. And I think ultimately over time, starving artists will become less starving because our skills and our output is going to be in greater demand because we are going to yearn for what makes us human. It's interesting that things that become so natural to us and were so prevalent at one point in time are becoming increasingly more challenging to discover and find and cultivate and curate. And so I told Spencer, you know, he's really busy right now, but at some point, I'm just going to give him free rein. I'm saying, look, you produce whatever you want to produce. And I gave him some very brief outlines and parameters. I don't remember them exactly off the top of my head, but you know, I gave him some, you know, some brief thoughts about what I wanted or what I was feeling. But ultimately, whatever he decides to produce, I'm going to take. I'm going to keep. Because it's pure human output. I mean, yes, he's going to use technology to improve the production, but it's coming from his heart and his soul. And that's all I care about. And every single time you hear his voice or you hear his music, I want you to be reminded of that human potential and of that human output. And so his brother shared this reel, and I don't remember the exact source and I don't remember the exact words, so I'm going to have to paraphrase. But it was someone that was being interviewed, and he was asked what art means to him. And he said that art is when extremely sensitive individuals present work to remind you of what the world means to them. Or it's when extremely sensitive individuals show you what they see. You know, something to that effect. And I think that, yeah, I think a lot of times artists are sensitive. You know, I don't know what that ratio is or if there's a formula or if that's always true. But I think a lot of times in thinking about the artists that I know, you know, they all care at least. They care about what they are producing. They care about impacting people in some capacity. They care so certain things upset them to a point where they feel inclined to do something about it. You know, they just, or we are maybe more in tune with certain rhythms of the world. I don't know. It can be really exhausting being sensitive, but I wouldn't want it any other way because I feel like we are in tune to an experience that is more authentic and more nuanced than a lot of people may realize or a lot of people may be aware of. Now, for me, you know, art can appear in different forms. You know, as I mentioned, my dad, I think that there's also a scale with me. So I've already kind of given away my definition of what art is. And to me, art is just human output. It doesn't even have to be intentional. You can be an incredible artist in my eyes and may never realize that you're an artist. And I think that as artificial intelligence becomes more prevalent, my understanding of art becomes more centered on pure human output. And so I've given it sort of like a taxonomy or a scale where the more that technology is infused with the output, the less artistic it truly is in my mind. All right, so if people are creating art using artificial intelligence or using software, that really doesn't serve me well. I don't find that interesting. I don't find that compelling. I don't have any emotional attachment to that. As opposed to a toddler who is discovering a medium for the first time and has not been formally trained, but in their search of communication, in their attempt to interact with this world that they are just learning about, that is art. That is art in its most primal form. Now, I've decided to talk about what art is because I've been thinking about that a lot. I've been working on this piece for almost 2.5 months, and I've had to think a lot about this latest collection and what art means and what I'm trying to accomplish with this collection, and I'll get into that more, I think, in another episode. But I had to really come to grips of what art is to me and what I'm trying to accomplish with my art over the last few episodes. And a few episodes ago, you know, I started talking about my cancer diagnosis and what I was dealing with personally. And I'll be honest with you, ever since I started talking about that, fewer and fewer people have been listening to my episodes, at least immediately after they were published. And for whatever reason, you know, maybe people were turned off by that. Or maybe people cared about my health and they weren't willing to hear about the potential outcome or the potential setback. And so earlier in this podcast, I referenced how data can be misleading. And so I said, maybe that's why. And so depending on your perspective, and this is true for really anything, depending on your perspective, you can come to two completely different realizations. You can start to think, okay, people are listening less because they no longer find value in this podcast, or they no longer want to listen, or it's too off the beaten path from what I set out to accomplish. And that can be discouraging. Or another possibility is that they care about me and they don't want to hear about my health deteriorating. And so they don't want to hear that. And so to protect themselves, they're not listening. Now, those two perspectives are valid and they're possible and they represent two completely different outcomes and thought processes. Now, for me, I was faced with a very important decision and I said, okay, well, let's say that you're going to receive less listeners, less downloads, if you continue to tell these raw, authentic stories and provide information that may not be as pleasant sometimes or may not make people laugh as often. Is that going to ultimately change my direction? Is that ultimately going to change my art? Are you willing to produce art that you find authentic and personal and valuable, even if it doesn't result in progress towards your ultimate goal of becoming a full-time artist? And I ultimately decided that yes, I would not let downloads and feedback ultimately detract me from my ultimate message and my ultimate expression. And for that decision, I believe I'm an artist. My podcast was designed for a couple of different reasons. You know, when I first started out, I just wanted to chronicle this journey. I had no idea where this journey was going to take me. But as a teacher and as someone that was inspired at a very young age to pursue their dreams, as someone who I've always had dreams, I've always had goals, and I've always believed in them, and I've always believed that consistent effort results in progress towards those goals. And I just wanted to model that. You know, you go on Instagram or you hear these quotes, and that's great, and that can be uplifting. But I think they're also misleading. And I just wanted to start from the very bottom, and I just wanted to detail every step along the way. The good, the bad, the ugly, the sad, all that stuff. Because a lot of that's left out. I don't know of a single podcast that started from ground one. Because there's risk there. There's risk that I will never achieve my dream. And I think that scares a lot of people from doing what I'm doing. But I think it's more important to be authentic. It's more important to share the highs and the lows, because that's what life is. That's what the journey is. And so over time, as this podcast has progressed, I realized that I want this podcast to kind of be the anti-social media, because the social media, and especially the social media feeds, it's all a highlight reel. That's not what life is. And it's discouraging, to especially to the younger generation who's trying to figure out who they are and what they want to accomplish. And all they see is success, highlights, victories. And in my experience, you don't experience any victories until you fail repeatedly. And so honestly, when I was starting this podcast, I was expecting to share a lot more failures than I have, because that's what I'm accustomed to. I'm accustomed to going out and putting myself out there and failing. And then, yeah, you'll see these successes, but it takes a lot of time and a lot of work to experience those sometimes brief victories. And so for me, this podcast is what I believe to be my definition of art. It's just an authentic story. It's authentic expression. And yes, I'm using technology to deliver this message, but this is as real as it gets. This is as raw as it gets. And that's what I love about this podcast. That's what I love about this medium, is I get to sit here in this booth that I created using my imagination. And I'm speaking into a microphone. And I don't have a paintbrush. I don't have any other medium except my life experiences. And my ability to hopefully weave it into a compelling story that you can take with you. And that you can apply in your own life. And so different mediums of art can achieve different things. Now, when it comes to painting, my art has evolved considerably over the last year and a half. And when you're starting out, you know, you don't have a lot of confidence and you're just trying your absolute best to match what is on your reference page. Typically, you know, for me, that's what it was. For me, it was, all right, that's my image. How can I recreate that image in its likeness using a different medium? So I'm taking this photograph. That's my guide. Here are my paints and my brushes. How can I duplicate that image on canvas? And that was my goal. That's all it was. And as time goes on, you start to question what your definition of art is and what you're trying to accomplish with your art. And that's no longer my definition. That's no longer my pursuit. And for me, and that's why art is such a difficult concept, and we all have different definitions and standards and understandings of art itself and how it's perceived or consumed and how we create it. Now, for me, I can look at artwork that is world-renowned, historical, widely accepted as a classic work. But if it does not show the artist's imagination, if it does not show the artist's vulnerability or the artist's ability to take risks, then I'm not as interested and it's not as impressive to me. And I know that might sound very critical. But I'll look at some art and it's a beautiful landscape and it looks like it's a photograph. That's not what I'm trying to accomplish with my art. And that's okay. That art is beautiful and there's different types of art for everybody. But for me, it's not going far enough. And so I had to realize, what am I trying to accomplish and what keeps me engaged, what keeps me interested, and what keeps me challenged? And for me, I have a difficult time sitting down and just simply trying to match what's on that photograph, because it's less artistic for me. I think art should be more than just transferring one image from one medium to another medium. And it's more challenging that way. It's more challenging to get on a podcast and be open about how much you are failing at something. It's more difficult to sit on a canvas and say, I've never seen this scene anywhere in the world, but I'm going to try and recreate it for you. And there isn't a reference page for this. You know, again, as artificial intelligence increases in popularity or its prevalence or preponderance in our daily lives, you know, I'm looking for art that really captures what makes us human. You know, I want to see risks in my art. I want to show people that, you know, my art, I want to be metaphorical. I want people to see that I'm taking risks in my art, just like you need to be taking risks in your life. You know, I want to be raw and authentic and show my failures with this journey, because that's what every journey includes. You know, real art expression, real human experience isn't just this picturesque landscape. There's storms, and art needs to capture that. Art is missed lines. It's setting out with a plan and then realizing that the plan doesn't work. And so there are some smudges on this. There's places on my artwork that you'll see that I had a vision and I had to scrap it. And you won't notice it unless you look closely, but I'm leaving that there on purpose, because that's what my art is supposed to represent. It represents failures. It's blemished. It's marred. Just like all of our lives and all of our journeys and all of our experiences, my canvas is supposed to represent that. And so for me, my art is embodying all these values that I've tried to impart with you and tried to inject into this podcast. It's my way of visually demonstrating those values of perseverance, of imagination, of failure. All of that. All of these unrelated parts and elements coming together in a cohesive canvas, in a cohesive scene, to create something that I find to be artistic, that I find to be a raw piece of human output. Because in order to accomplish anything in your life, you have to draw on all of these seemingly unrelated experiences to get you where you need to go. All of your highs and all of your lows, all of these interactions with myriad people from all over your life, they've all impacted and influenced you in one way or another. All these experiences, all these memories, all these values, all these beliefs that you have slowly accumulated over the course of your lifetime, all of that is going to play a part in where you're going next. And that's what I want to accomplish with my art moving forward. Taking all of these seemingly unrelated themes or all these unrelated elements and making them work together.
Thanks for listening to the Painting the Midnight Oil podcast. Come back soon.